Hey there, it's Lars. Thanks for checking out the Lars Larson podcasting experience, and have a fantastic day. Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. If you want to join the best conversation in talk journalism, it happens right here every day at 866-HEY-LARS. And if you're a naysayer, that is, you disagree with my point of view, we're glad to welcome you, and not only welcome you, but put you right to the head of the line at 866-439-5277. If you want to send an email, talk@LarsLarson.com. Have no fear, they all come to me and not to anybody else. And if you want to vote in our Twitter poll, our daily question from the news of the day, just go to @LarsLarsonShow on Twitter. And if you're like me and don't like Twitter, go to my website at LarsLarson.com. Your vote counts the same. Now, there have been revolutions in this world that have been touched off by what seem at the moment relatively minor things. In fact, just a few years ago in the Middle East, there was a man who was selling vegetables, and he was stopped by a female cop, and that was significant for the Middle East. And she wrote him up, said, "You can't sell these vegetables. You have to have a permit." And he didn't have the money for the permit. So he was so distraught, he poured gasoline on himself and set himself on fire, and that helped touch off a revolution. At this point, there may be something similar going on in the country of Iran, and I knew I needed to get the bottom line on this, so we called Russell Berman, who's the Walter Haas Professor in Humanities at Stanford, a senior fellow at the Hoover Institution, and co-chair of the Working Group on the Middle East and the Islamic World. Professor Berman, welcome back.
Thank you. I'm happy to be here.
I'll tell you that I was frustrated during Obama's years that there seemed to be an awful lot of especially younger Iranians who wanted to have a change in their country, and they tried to get it by going to the streets, and they got, you know, kind of the cold shoulder from Barack Obama. Are we seeing a similar opportunity today in Iran because of a woman who was killed in police custody because of the way she was dressed?
Unfortunately, the Biden administration is replicating the Obama administration's disregard for the democratic protests in Iran. In 2009, I believe it was, President Obama did not speak out forcefully in defense of the significant protests against the Mullah regime in Tehran. And now we're witnessing something similar. Just 2 weeks ago, a young Iranian woman was arrested, brutalized, and killed because she did not wear her headscarf correctly. The morality police took her into custody, and she never came out again alive. What is remarkable is that this has sparked 2 weeks of significant demonstrations across Iran with women taking off their hijab, their headscarf, burning it, calling for the death of the Raisi and of Khamenei, the leaders of Iran. Will this touch off a revolution? We don't know. But I certainly wish that the Biden administration were more forceful in its response. Of course, it's condemned pro forma the killing of the young woman, but it should be breaking off the Iran negotiations, the Iran deal negotiations that continue despite the lack of success. There should be a much more forceful condemnation of what's going on than what we're seeing.
Well, and Professor Berman, isn't that, you know, you said the standard condemnation. It sounds like the strongly worded letter that all of us ridiculed is the idea of, okay, we'll officially take a position. We're not in favor of you beating young ladies to death because they're wearing their headscarves, but we're not going to go beyond that. That's all the Biden administration is doing right now.
Well, let's put this in some context, because in addition to the tragedy of Mahsa Amini, that's the name of the woman who was killed by the morality police in Iran, we have in recent weeks witnessed assassination attempts by Iranian agents on an Iranian American woman who is a dissident and a strong critic of the regime. This is Mahsa Alinja, who lives in Brooklyn, and Iranian agents have come to her door with weapons and in the hope of assassinating her. And in addition, we had the assassination attempt, the Iran-inspired assassination attempt of the famous author Salman Rushdie. All of this is coming out of Iran. It's not clear to me why. Well, it's shameful that the Biden administration is not more forceful in its condemnation of what Iran is doing.
Although, Professor, I'm kind of tempted to throw into that context you offered up, not in counterpoint to it, but here in America, last Friday, a Catholic man who likes to go to abortion clinics and protest with his 12-year-old son, and a year ago, he got into a little shoving scuffle, but nothing more than that. Joe Biden's FBI had 25 to 30 agents show up at his house armed with guns drawn to arrest this guy for having, you know, basically voiced his opinion, even though America has a First Amendment and Iran does not. So that's a piece of context about this administration as well.
You're right. That is a piece of context. The politicization of the FBI, like before, the politicization of the IRS. These are warning signs for our democracy. President Biden talks about the threat to democracy. He should understand that the biggest threat to democracy is in his own administration.
Yeah, and let's go back to the Middle East, though. Is it as simple, because I tend to view things in simple terms, but is it as simple as the fact that Joe Biden is so desperate to get back to the Barack Obama style deal with Iran, even though Iran doesn't seem to have been moving much? They're calling the shots, and we're negotiating through the Russians, believe it or not, with Iran over getting some nuclear deal that doesn't even seem all that meaningful anymore. But Joe Biden is so anxious to get that deal that he's willing to let this whole movement simply fade away.
Very few people think this deal is still going to come through. It might yet still. The point is that President Biden is holding on to the image of this deal because he doesn't want to break with the Obama legacy. I think something else is at stake, though. The question is, why is it that Democratic administrations are soft on Iran?
And
I think they're soft on Iran in general because Iran is a revolutionary regime, and that's where the sympathies of the Democratic establishment lie.
Why? Why are they sympathetic to a revolutionary regime, especially a regime that, you remember there were a lot of bad things about the Shah, but the Shah was westernizing that country, you know, decades ago. When the Khomeini came in, he said, I'm going to make the streets run red with blood. And he not just figuratively, but literally did. It's a terrible regime. It's a state sponsor of terrorism, according to the U.S. State Department. It's an evil country. Why do they want to side with a bunch of evildoers?
I think that the progressive wing of the Democratic Party is fundamentally sympathetic to the Iranian Revolution, just like I think that the core of the conservative Republican Party is more or less sympathetic to the conservative monarchies of the Middle East. It's as simple as that.
Where do we go at this point, and what could Americans do who disagree with our current regime, the Biden regime, do to try to help the Iranians and say, we'd like to see you bring about change in your country if that's what you desire, because we did that a couple of hundred years ago right here.
Well, what can Americans do realistically in the face of the news from Iran? Write to your newspapers, write to your congresspeople, say that the United States should be more forceful in condemning the Iranian regime, say that we should cut off the JCPOA negotiations as long as this is going on, demand that the killers of Mahsa Amini are brought to justice.
Professor Berman, it's always a pleasure to have you on the show. Thanks so very much.
Enjoyed talking. Till next.
Thank you, sir. That's Russell Berman. He's at Stanford University, professor of humanities. He's also at the Hoover Institution and co-chair of the Working Group on the Middle East and the Islamic World. You're a small business owner. You know how important it is to be ready for the insane holiday spending season that's coming up. So if you haven't started prepping for the chaos of holiday mailing and shipping, you're already falling behind. Luckily, Stamps.com has everything you need to make your life a whole lot easier. It's the 24/7 post office that you can access from anywhere. No lines, no traffic, no hassle. Stamps.com is your one-stop shop for all your shipping and mailing needs. For more than 20 years, Stamps.com has been indispensable for more than 1 million American businesses. Get access to the USPS and UPS services that you need to run your business right from your computer. With inflation on the rise, every dollar you make or spend counts. Protect your margins with major discounts on USPS and UPS, up to 86% off. Get ahead of the holiday chaos this year. Get started with Stamps.com today. Sign up with promo code LARS for an offer that includes a four-week trial, free postage, and a free digital scale. No long-term commitments or contracts. Just go to Stamps.com and click on the mic at the top of the page and then enter code word LARS. Glad to get your calls at 866-HEY-LARS. That's 866-439-5277. Send your emails to talk@LarsLarson.com. Vote in our Twitter poll, @LarsLarsonShow. You've got the Lars Larson Show. Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. I'll get back to your phone calls and emails here in just a moment at 866-HEY-LARS. That's 866-439-5277. And, of course, vote in our Twitter poll, at Lars Larson Show. And if you don't like Twitter like me, go to my website, LarsLarson.com. I've been looking forward to talking to Peter Navarro again. Dr. Peter Navarro, as I should call him, former assistant to President Trump. He was there from the beginning all the way to the end, director of trade and industrial policy for the White House, and the author of a new book called Taking Back Trump's America, Why We Lost the White House and How We'll Win It Back. Doctor, it's a pleasure to have you back on the show.
You know, great to be with you, Lars. I remember, if I've got this right, back in 2016, talking to you close to the November 8th election for President Trump that he won, and talking about what it meant to be a Trump Republican. And you fast forward now, this book, Taking Back Trump's America, it's not really a book for me, it's a mission. We have a country and an economy that is in chaos right now. The economy is collapsing. We're fighting inflation that's eroding wages, making it impossible for people to live. The financial markets are being crushed. We lost literally trillions of dollars of wealth in this country. We got an invasion on our southern border. And, of course, Putin and Xi Jinping of China are roaming free to do their mischief. And it's all because elections have consequences. It's all because Pelosi, Schumer, and Biden are in charge and doing seemingly everything possibly wrong for this country. So Taking Back Trump's America is really the blueprint and battle cry for the MAGA movement, not just to get Trump back in the White House in 2024, but most immediately in the next less than 40 days, get Nancy Pelosi the hell out of the Speaker's chair in Congress so that we can at least stop hemorrhaging all the problems we're hemorrhaging now.
I couldn't agree with you more. So tell me this. You mentioned Joe Biden being in charge. Do you think he's really calling the shots, as incompetent as he seems to many of us just watching from when on those rare occasions he shows up in front of cameras like he did and says, "Where's Jackie?" Meaning Jackie Walorski, the member of Congress who was killed in a car wreck 2 months ago. This is a president who doesn't remember even things like that. And he doesn't seem to be all there upstairs. So is he really calling the shots? Or is it Barack Obama from his Georgetown house, or what?
I think most likely the president of this country right now is Ron Klain, the Biden chief of staff, and maybe Jill with a little bit of advice, God help us all, from Hunter Biden, who Joe Biden, by the way, called the smartest person he'd ever met. You put your finger on the pulse of something. The problem here, Lars, is that Biden was with Obama for 8 long years, and they trained a large number of bureaucrats in the deep swamp to learn how to effectively govern in terms of getting things done. The problem we face right now, Lars, is that everything they're getting done quickly is wrong for the American people. Everything. I mean, if you break down kind of the stagflation issue, you got recession and inflation all at the same time. In the Taking Back Trump's America book, I have a chapter about a memo I wrote in 2020, September, warning precisely of this looming stagflation crisis. Now, keep in mind, that was 3 years ago. And I could see coming, because of the breakdown of our global supply chains, this buildup of cost push inflation. So we've got that in spades now. And on top of that, we're overstimulating the economy with Keynesian stimulus, which is fueling inflation, with these trillion-dollar bills on Capitol Hill that are really misplaced. The forced vax policy decimated our labor markets. Everything he does. And by the way, buried the lead here, there's a great story in Taking Back Trump's America about how I work with the White House legal counsel and President Trump to seal that border down south. That border right now is a sieve. There's over 2 million illegal aliens at a minimum that have come over since Biden took office. And that not only puts downward pressure on wages and employment opportunities for black, brown, and blue-collar Americans, it burdens our schools, burdens our emergency rooms, and it causes everybody's taxes to go up as we have to subsidize that illegal immigration. So this just, look, the people listening to this show, if you're angry, good. If you're frustrated, bad. Don't be frustrated. What you need to do is find a couple of races, either in your state or around the country, where they will help take back Trump's America. You know, there's a Senate race in Arizona, Blake Masters. Help him
out.
Very
important.
Mitch McConnell, a rhino, certainly isn't, but that could be the key to the majority. There's House races around the country. I love one in Iowa, 3. Zach Nunn, a Republican, is running against an incumbent, Sidney Axne. Axne is my mantra. You know, you could just go to somebody's website like Zach Nunn, send him a few bucks. The word is action, action, action. That's the culture of the Taking Back Trump's America book, and that's what I urge your listeners to do.
Let me ask you about this. I'm talking to Peter Navarro, author most recently of Taking Back Trump's America, Why We Lost the White House and How We'll Win It Back. The deep state that Donald Trump talked about, that most of the mainstream media just simply denied the existence of it, but it even existed within the White House, and you identify some of the bad guys, including the president's son-in-law.
Yes, there's the old Reagan rule that personnel is policy, meaning that if a president has the wrong personnel around him that doesn't abide by his vision, he'll get the wrong policy. Well, that played out in spades in the Trump White House, at least early in the administration, and I coined the refinement that bad personnel is not just bad policy, but bad politics. And this part of the story of Taking Back Trump's America is how sappers within the West Wing itself created a set of strategic failures that led to an election which I think should have been a landslide but was made close enough to steal. And some of the people I mentioned include Treasury Secretary Steve Mnuchin. I mean, if he had never darkened the door of the Oval, the boss might be there just with him alone. That guy did so much damage. But Kushner failed on many fronts, but probably the worst mistake was how he ran the 2020 campaign. In the Taking Back Trump's America, I go back to the beautiful 2016 campaign, 20 people on an airplane, 100 people like me in the Trump Tower War Room in Manhattan. Every nickel counted, and we got it done.
Trump's America, Why We Lost the White House and How We'll Win It Back. Its author is Peter Navarro, who was there from the beginning to the end of the Trump administration. By the way, I know that hiring is challenging, especially right now when you have so much else on your plate. Luckily, there's one place you can go where hiring is simple, fast, and smart, a place where growing businesses connect to qualified candidates. That place is ZipRecruiter.com/Lars. ZipRecruiter does the work for you. ZipRecruiter uses powerful technology to find and match the right candidates with your jobs. You can easily review the recommended candidates and then invite your top choices to apply. ZipRecruiter is so effective that 4 out of 5 employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate within the first day. No wonder ZipRecruiter is the number one rated hiring site based on G2 satisfaction ratings as of January this year. And right now, to try ZipRecruiter for free, my listeners can go to ZipRecruiter.com/Lars. That's ZipRecruiter.com/LARS. ZipRecruiter.com/Lars. ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire. And you're listening to the Lars Larson Show. Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. It's a pleasure to be with you, and I'm glad to take your phone calls and your emails at 866-HEY-LARS. And if you have a moment, vote in our Twitter poll. We put up a brand new question written out of the news of the day every single day, and we put it up 2 places. I'm one of those that's not crazy about Twitter, and I know that some of you are as well. You can vote on our Twitter poll at Lars Larson Show. I have to tell you that there's something that really gets under my skin. And it's these cute little climate activists out there. And by that, I mean usually teenage young men and women. I mean, they're not of age yet, but they're activists. And I have no problem with teenagers being activists. The problem I have is a lot of the climate activists come out and they clearly know nothing about the subject. They say we should be in a world where people don't use automobiles and we don't burn diesel and gasoline. And I know to a fair certainty, most of these kids are coming from a household where they live in a house made out of wood cut from trees. They, when they use the toilet, they use toilet paper that's made from trees. They eat food that came to a grocery store in a refrigerated truck, and the truck was driven by diesel. And I also suspect that since a lot of the kids who've chosen to be climate activists, because it's so popular, people like Greta Thunberg and others, almost every state has a bunch of teenagers who all say, we're filing a federal court case, and we're going to go in and demand that the government fix the climate crisis right now, as though it's something that could be fixed by just a judge saying, make that change. So anyway, it bothers me because when I've had the opportunity to talk to some of these teenage climate activists and you ask them any questions about the subject, they don't know much about it. They just know that it's really, really popular. They get a lot of public attention. They get their face on the front of the Daily Dead Fish wrapper on TV or on radio. And everybody cuts them slack and says, well, you know, they're teenagers. You have to. No, I don't want to encourage them to talk about things about which they know nothing. And I don't want to talk to them about, or I don't want them to be out being activists on things in which, in many cases, they are hypocrites. So I heard part of an interview. One of my great producers, Mackenzie Prunty, found this. A 16-year-old climate activist in New Zealand. And she goes on this radio show, News Talk ZB. And the host is Heather Duplessis Allen. And she went on last Friday. And there are two parts to this that I want to play for you. I want to play part one so you get an idea. And this young lady is talking to the radio host about her climate activism and all the things she's doing to make sure that she saves planet Earth. Play part one, please.
So we would have to apply to have like approved events to be able to fly for.
Well, that's one thing that you could look at doing.
Am I allowed to go to Fiji? Is that necessary?
In the current climate crisis, I don't think that that's necessary.
When was the last time you were on a plane?
I'm not sure. Maybe a few months ago, to be honest.
Where'd you go?
Fiji.
Izzy! Izzy!
Now, I got to tell you something. Fiji has one main industry, and it's tourism. I've never been to Fiji. Would I like to go to Fiji sometime? Yes. Have I ever been there? No. Do I ever think there's much likelihood I'll go to Fiji? Probably not. But you go there to have fun. Now, this young lady is telling the radio host, we have to stop flying on airplanes. Well, are you still flying on airplanes? Well, yes. And where are you going? To a place where all the only reason to go there, it's not for business, it's not for education, it's to go and sit on the beach and drink a cold drink and have fun. So then the radio host really bears down on this young lady, Izzy Cook. Take a listen to part two.
Don't you care about the climate, Izzy?
Of course I care about the climate.
Not enough. You went to... you went to Fiji. Izzy, come on, mate. Are you serious? Are you serious, Izzy?
Well, it is pretty ironic, but to be honest, it's not really a trip that I wanted to go on, but I can't really get out of it.
Why'd you go?
My parents wanted to go.
Izzy!
I didn't want to go.
How are you embarrassed that your parents did that to the planet and then forced you to do it as well?
Of course I'm not embarrassed.
Did you have a terrible time?
Not really. I didn't have
See, I'm sorry. Mate, listen, you're such a champion. I think you've got a brilliant future ahead of you. And are you doing another strike soon?
Yeah, well, we'll look to.
Good. I will talk to you again when I get you back on the show.
Now, this is the joke that this young lady tells everybody else, you can't fly on planes. But she goes to a place and even admits she had a good time because she was there on vacation. Well, my parents made me go. That would be like, and if my parents were still alive and I said, well, my parents made me go to Hawaii. And yeah, I had a horrible day. But nobody else should fly on airplanes. You know what happened after that interview? Over the weekend, the mother of Izzy Cook, the 16-year-old climate activist, got angry and wrote this opinion piece saying the radio host should be ashamed for bullying her daughter. Friday evening, I listened in horror as my 16-year-old daughter had a phone conversation with somebody who appeared to be bullying her, laughing at her and talking over her. As soon as she got off the call, I demanded to know who the hell was speaking to my child this way. So this is a mother who apparently has no problem getting on an airplane and going for a family vacation in Fiji. And if her daughter was not a climate activist, I'd say, good, good for you. I'm glad your family can travel off to exotic places, although I suspect for people in New Zealand, it's a lot closer, so not nearly as exotic as it would be for, say, somebody here in the United States. And she says these commentators don't give a blank about climate change. They don't care about Arctic ice melting at four times the expected rate. In other words, the mother is getting on her bully pulpit, the same mother who joined a family vacation flying thousands of miles to go to Fiji so they could sit on the beach and drink cool drinks and go out to dinner and do all these things that are way out of the reach of almost everybody on planet Earth, almost everybody, and get on her high horse in high dudgeon and say, how dare you treat my daughter that way? Well, you know what? If you decide to become a climate activist, people should take that as an invitation to ask you tough questions about your position. To say, do you really actually live this way, or are you just interested in telling everybody else how to live their lives? You shouldn't drive cars, but I do. You shouldn't use fossil fuels, but I do. Yeah, this is why I'm always curious when some of these teenage activists, even in my neck of the woods, have decided to file federal lawsuits. I have asked time and again to get them on the show to ask them, do you actually live this in your own life? Do you live in a 1,000-square-foot house or a 5,000-square-foot house? Do you go on vacation by flying on planes? Do you drive a car? Do you do all the other things that you want to tell the rest of us not to do? Well, then how dare you? How dare you be the hypocrite who tells everybody else how to live their lives, because you are the perfect model of people like John Kerry, Joe Biden's climate czar, who tells everybody else, we've got to save the planet, as he's climbing on his private jet to jet off to another part of the world to be the gas bag he truly is and give another speech, because that's worth thousands of gallons of aviation fuel. In any case, glad to get your calls and naysayer calls as well. We welcome them right here on the Lars Larson Show. Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. It's a Wednesday, and of course, we're following what's going on in hurricane-ravaged Florida right now. I have to tell you something. I've been to Florida in a number of times. I've never been there during a hurricane. Please spare a thought and say a prayer for our fellow Americans who are standing up to Ian's winds of 155 miles an hour. They have entire towns that are inundated with what they estimate to be up to 2 feet of rain. I was hearing forecasts earlier today of 20 inches. That is a massive amount of rain to fall in a very flat place where it doesn't run out that quickly. And we can only hope that everybody comes through this safe and sound, although it's hard to imagine that, a Cat 4 storm that is now ripping through the central part of Florida. Welcome to the program. Glad to have you on board. If you want to jump into what I call the best conversation in talk journalism, it's right here every day at 866-HEY-LARS. That's 866-439-5277. Send your emails to talk@LarsLarson.com and vote in our Twitter poll. I'll give you the question here in just a moment if you haven't heard it already. You'll find it two places, at Lars Larson Show on Twitter and LarsLarson.com on the web. Now, what's coming up this hour? Is the left's accusation that the far right, I guess that would include people like me, is fascist, is that just a projection of their own ideology? In other words, every time the Democrats say something nasty about the rest of us, it's because they're doing it themselves. That's what the psychologists call projection. We're going to talk about that. CNN host Don Lemon tried to blame Hurricane Ian on climate change, except that NOAA's hurricane director shut him down. NOAA is the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration. He wasn't standing up for any of that, and he pushed back hard. Stay tuned for details on that. And about a year after Joe Biden's DOJ and Merrick Garland called parents standing up to school boards domestic terrorists, have things gotten better or gotten worse? And I want you to take just a moment to cast a vote in our Twitter poll. We put it up. It's not scientific. It's just for fun. Did Joe Biden sabotage the Russian Nord Stream 2 gas pipeline? We made the case yesterday, beginning with the soundbite of Joe Biden back in February, saying if Russia invades, there will no longer be a Nord Stream 2. And when a reporter wondered, how are you going to do that? the project isn't under your control. It's under German and Russian control. The president said February 7th of this year, I promise you we will be able to do it. Well, now there's been an explosion that's wrecked apparently Nord Stream 1 and Nord Stream 2. The means, motive, and opportunity seem to be pointing at the United States as the most likely suspect. So, did Joe Biden sabotage the Nord Stream 2 pipeline or the government controlled by Joe Biden, if you want to be that precise? I'd have to answer yes in that case. You can answer any way you like at Lars Larson Show and at LarsLarson.com, our website, free from all the Twitter censorship. The Twitter poll is brought to you by AMAC, the Association of Mature American Citizens. AMAC has the conservative values I believe in. I joined the group years ago, and you should too. It's actually very, very valuable to me. AMAC.us or call 888-262-2006. AMAC's better. Better for you and better for America. Yesterday, I asked you this question. Should illegal aliens get official government picture ID as California just signed into law? Gavin Newsom signed the bill on Friday. 89% of you joined me in a no vote on that question. Only 11% of you said yes. And believe me, those folks would make great naysayers. I'd love to hear what they have to say. And our email of the day so far, but you can always send more to talk at LarsLarson.com. Andrew writes in, Lars, Manchin got burned when he did a deal with the devil. He's talking about the expedited energy approvals that Joe Manchin wanted just for West Virginia, but not for the rest of the country as his part of the deal. Chucky followed the Nancy method of legislating. Got to vote for it to see what's in it. Well, the prize behind the back door to Manchin's permitting deal was as empty as Schumer's promises to the public. Now, if the Republicans had any smarts, they would try to flip Manchin to their side. Now, that'd be an interesting change, wouldn't it? And a shout-out to our friends at our affiliate station, KUFO AM 970 in Portlandia, Oregon, where you can find this show Monday through Friday and great talk radio the rest of the day. To your calls now, let me go first to Ronnie in Virginia. Hey, Ronnie, welcome to the Lars Larson Show. What's on your mind tonight?
Thanks for taking my call. Years ago, I heard the guy earlier talking about the high prices of food in Vermont or wherever he was calling from. You know, people picking it up, putting it back down because they couldn't afford it.
Yeah.
Well, several years ago, I worked for a local food bank. And my job, part of it was filling orders for different people to give the food away. But another part was separating the food. And I had a can of food was like in December. This is December, October of 2021. And the food was the best date was December 21. So I went and asked the guy in charge. He said, Ronnie, that's the best date for flavor. But canned food is good for 5 years after that date. Because I know I'm 77 years old, and people used to can in glass jars. They keep it for years and years in the basement. Yep. And a lot of people, I think, are throwing good food away because, oh, God, this stuff is – and
it's past the sell-by date. They call it the sell-by date, Ronnie. I agree with you. Yeah. In fact, my wife and I, we were cleaning out a house, and we had a bunch of canned food. And I looked at it, and I said, it's only a few months till the sell-by date. And I took it down to the food bank. They said, oh, don't worry about that. That stuff's perfectly fine. You're right. For flavor and taste and all that, best to use it by that date. But other than about being safe, if the can isn't dented, don't worry about it. And I appreciate the heads up. Let's go to Joy, who's a naysayer. Joy, you know we love naysayers on this program. What's on your mind, and what do you and I disagree about?
Well, I disagree about the conversation that you were having with the gentleman about the kids who are protesting about policies with the LGBTQ community, especially
With the transgender. That's the policies only affect transgender. They don't affect lesbians or gays, just transgender.
Yeah.
But so just so people who are listening who may not have heard that, Glenn Youngkin, the governor of the Commonwealth of Virginia, has said that in the schools, we want transgender kids to use the bathroom, the restroom that is appropriate to their born gender. So if you were born a boy, use the boys' room. If you were born a girl, use the girls' room. No matter what you call yourself or imagine yourself to be today, that's one change. The second one is if you want to be called by a different name at school or a different pronoun, you need to have parental consent. What's wrong with either one of those?
Well, the one thing is that there is so much violence against transgender boys and girls or men
baloney.
And women, young
baloney.
People, that, huh?
I think that's baloney. Tell me when you say there's violence.
You can read the information. There's been more violence against. So if you had a bathroom, a boy's bathroom, and a boy walked in wearing girls' clothes, there's the greater chance that this person is going to be beat up than if they went in and went into the bathroom as they see their gender. I mean,
I'm going to disagree with you because if this person wants to hold themselves out as a different gender and a different person, get their parents' permission, number one. And number two, use the bathroom that corresponds to your actual gender. No harm, no foul, no problem. But Joy, interesting naysayer. Coming up, we got to talk about socialism and fascism. And is this just left-wing projection? Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. If you want to jump into the best conversation in talk journalism, it happens right here every day at 866-HEY-LARS. And we always promise and have never violated that promise, naysayers always go to the head of the line. Well, a lot of terminology gets thrown around, like terms like fascism. And it drives me crazy because I know what fascist means. It's a political ideology where the group is more important than the individual. And I love to talk to people about this, and they'll say, well, you're a fascist. And I said, no, I believe in individual rights. You're objecting to that. So are the left's cries of fascism? They seem to throw that term around a lot. They've been throwing it at the new prime minister of Italy quite a lot as well. And all she's concerned about, it seems, is God, country, and family. We're talking about individuals there. I thought we'd talk about it with Scott McKay, who's publisher of a conservative news site called Hayride.com and author most recently of the Revivalist Manifesto, How Patriots Can Win the Next American Era. Scott, welcome to the program.
Hey, Lars, thanks for having me on. It's an honor.
Well, listen, I appreciate you coming on. This does drive me crazy, though, because people use the term fascist and they don't seem to know what it means. America has always been about individual rights, I'd say even to a fault. And people say, what do you mean by that? And I say, well, in America, if you're accused of a crime and you're actually guilty of the crime, but your rights are violated, we believe in individual rights so much so we'll let a guilty person, even a guilty killer, go if we violated his individual rights. A fascist society does nothing of the kind. They say we do whatever is best for the group. And fascism usually goes hand in hand with socialism, which I've always pointed out, capitalism is natural. Socialism has to be done to the point of a gun.
Yeah, that's correct. I mean, what we're talking about is various species of collectivist ideology, which at this point, there's no question which party in America is more committed to that, and it's definitely not the Republicans. And I would say that it's especially not the people that are being accused of, you know, sort of a right wing authoritarian thing, like, you know, folks who are national conservatives, who, like Giorgia Meloni, have kind of settled on the idea of God, country, family as a starting point for a revised conservatism.
And what's wrong with that? Yeah. I mean, I don't understand.
I'm sorry.
No, I don't understand.
Small government fascist. I mean, no. And apparently that's what we have now.
Yeah. And when I see this young lady who's just won the prime minister's spot and she talks about God and country and family, and I understand why the left fears that, because they see government as the end goal, whereas I think most conservatives say government's a tool and it should serve the public, not the other way around. And when we begin to have to serve the government, oh, you want me to wear a mask? Okay. You want me to shut down my business during a pandemic? Okay. And it's all about the control of the many by the government, and to hell with anybody's individual rights.
Yeah. I mean, I remember the old days when the left were liberals rather than full on leftists. I remember the old days when those were the civil libertarians, right? I mean, remember when the ACLU would Yep. actually defend the rights of people that were in foul odor with the majority of the country? Now it's few and far between when you see the ACLU actually defend somebody who's a dissident for the dominant elite regime. I mean, they're now a tool of that regime, and it's kind of one more institution that seems to be corrupted in America. And, you know, every single one of these things, they're all on the left, and they're all, they just aren't, don't have a lot of integrity to their stated mission anymore. And I mean, I'm not the only one that notices this. I think everybody does. And it makes everybody queasy.
It does, and it should. And in fact, I've used that term. I don't use a lot of pop psych terms, but projection, where someone accuses another person of whatever they're accusing them of. And you say, you're doing that because you want to cover your own bad behavior. So when the left says, you folks are fascists, and I say, you don't know what it means, and you guys are the guys who are trying to run everybody else's lives. Most conservatives, I'm a little bit toward the libertarian side of things. Just stay out of my life as much as possible, government, and we'll have a great country if you let everybody, you know, operate on their own accord within the law, and let us all be what we want to be. And then they turn around and say, no, you can only be what you want to be if you let the government tell you what to be.
Well, and I'll give you an example sort of what you're talking about is, you know, not that long ago, there seemed to be a very strong American consensus in favor of Martin Luther King's colorblind society, right?
Yep.
You know,
yep.
Judge people by the content of their character and not the color of their skin. And in a flash, all of a sudden, that wasn't good enough. And now you have to be an anti-racist, which means, you know, you have to like see everything through a prism of race when that was what we were trying to get away from. And now it's sort of, you know, recriminative justice against, you know, whether it's white people or whatever. And, you know, everybody's miserable about race now. And it's one of these things where, you know, I think a lot of Americans thought, well, you know, we'll elect this guy Obama president, and that's going to exercise the demons of race once and for all. And what we found out was it made it worse. And 15 years later, anybody you talk to is there. They've never been more uncomfortable around people of a different race than they are right now.
Well, and what do they think is going to be the long-term effect of telling people if you have black or brown skin, then you are oppressed by the other folks. And if you have white skin, then you are part of the oppressor class and you get a benefit. And I know that an awful lot of Americans I know who are black and brown and white are saying, I'm not disadvantaged by my skin color because society judges me based on what I can do, on the content of my character. And the white folks are saying, hold on, I didn't do anything wrong to anybody. Well, you're not doing enough things right for people that the left would have you believe are crippled by the color of their skin. It's a very bizarre set of ideas that the left is pushing these days.
Well, and the thing of it is there's almost no way that you can foresee people are going to behave well when they internalize that message, right? I mean, you're going to cause people to hate each other by preaching the critical race theory gospel. There's no way to create racial harmony under those situations. And I think most of these people, they're not stupid. I think they get it. And so you start to wonder whether that's the object of this. You know, do you create miserable people who are easier, more easily governed according to the way that they seem to want to govern, which is, you know, SWAT raids for political dissidents and, you know, 87,000 IRS agents and so forth. That's a totalitarian, authoritarian government, which, you know, needs to govern over unruly people. Right. It's not a free society. And I start to wonder if these guys have that kind of commitment at all and how much longer the American people are going to put up with it before they turn that out and reject it outright.
See, and I worry that the long term effect is going to build resentments because people are going to say, well, since I was a little kid, I was told that because I have white skin, I've oppressed all these other people. So they got advantages I didn't get. And I said, I don't see that as a whole lot different than if I was in 1940s Alabama and they, you know, and somebody said, you can't have a loan to open a business or buy a house because of the color of your skin. Well, now you can't have a loan because of the reverse. We've just reversed the process and said, now you get a loan because of the color of your skin and that guy doesn't. And so this reverse, you know, we're going to compensate for things that happened 150 years ago, and we're going to do it today, and we're going to do it because you're the guilty party. And you say, why am I guilty? because of the color of your skin. And you say, didn't we go through a whole era where we determined it was wrong to discriminate against people based on the color of their skin? And now you say we're going to set it right because Ibrahim Kendi says the only way to fix past discrimination is to do it today. You got to read the whole piece that Scott McKay wrote. You'll find it at Spectator and also at his website, which is hayride.com. His book is called The Revivalist Manifesto, How Patriots Can Win the Next American Era. Scott, it's a pleasure to have you on. We'll have you back.
Absolutely, Lars, anytime. Thank you, sir.
Thank you very much. Take care now. Coming up, the mainstream media wants to blame Hurricane Ian on climate change, but a meteorologist said, no, that's not quite it. We'll get to that coming up next. Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. It's a pleasure to be with you, and I'm glad to get your phone calls and emails. By the way, an update on Hurricane Ian, still a Category 4 storm ripping through the central part of Florida. 1.5 million people without power at this point. Although I'm glad to see that Governor Ron DeSantis has made arrangements with the utility companies. They have 45,000 linemen on standby so that they can go ahead and start putting the power back in order as soon as the storm passes through. Don't have an exact number on that or an hour for when that's going to happen, but a lot of damage is being done. One of the things that I think could have been damaging is if Don Lemon had got his way on CNN, the Chicken Noodle News Network, anchor Don Lemon, one of the few that they've kept around. They've had some big layoffs over there. But he had the acting director of the Hurricane Center from NOAA. NOAA is the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration. And he had this guy on, Jamie Rome, who joined Don Lemon to talk about Hurricane Ian. And it seemed that Lemon was really anxious to get Jamie Rome, the acting director of the Hurricane Center, to say that the hurricane was the product of global warming. I want you to hear the exchange, and I'll tell you what I made of it next.
Look here, you can actually see, pretty interesting for your viewers, you can actually see a second eye wall forming around the inner eye wall, and that's basically the second eye wall has overtaken the original eye wall, and that should arrest development.
I'm just trying to get that. You said you want to talk about climate change, but what effect does climate change have on this phenomenon that is happening now? Because it seems these storms are intensifying. That's the question
here. I don't think you can link climate change to any one event. Okay. On the whole, on the cumulative, climate change may be making storms worse, to link it to any one event, I would caution against that.
I would caution against that. And in fact, later in the interview, Lemon tried to go back to it, and the head of the Hurricane Center wasn't having anything to do with it. And I'll remind you of something that does go back a few years. You go back to Hurricane Katrina. When Katrina hit, and it hit primarily New Orleans, was where the greatest amount of the damage was done, and the areas immediately around, there were global warming alarmists everywhere in the United States who said, you see, this is going to set off a huge number of gigantic, damaging hurricanes in the years ahead. And then guess what? We went through one of the quietest times for hurricanes that America had seen in a long, long time. I don't remember the exact numbers, but it was literally years before we got another string of really damaging storms. It completely did not live up to the predictions of the global warming alarmists who said, do you see, this is proof. They want every weather event like this to be proof, to prove their theorem that global warming is, number one, man-caused, and number two, damaging. Now, I've had meteorologists like my friend Chuck Weiss on the show before, where he will explain to you one of the little things that most of the folks who are pushing global warming don't like to admit to you. But one of the differences that happens is that you get the more violent storms when there are greater swings in temperature. And what Chuck points out is that if you had what the global warming alarmists want to have happen, which is a generally warming Earth, he says, if they were right that the entire Earth is getting warmer, even by a few degrees, that if you have greater warmth and greater uniformity of that, you know, fewer differences between the warm and the cold, that you're going to get less violent storms. That where you get the greater violent storms are where you have the greater swings between cold fronts, warm fronts, and that's where that energy comes from. What the global warming alarmists want to prove is they want to prove, number one, that there's global warming happening, two, that it's unnatural, and number three, that human beings are making it happen. And of course, number four, the bonus round, is that human beings, by changing the way we live on planet Earth, can actually hold back or retard global warming. Well, all of those assumptions are wrong. Number one, we've had periods of time in human history, not just Earth history, but within the last few hundred years and within the last thousand years, we've had periods where the Earth has gotten a lot warmer. The medieval warming period is a good example of that. And then we've had times when things got colder and you saw massive crop failures and things like that. Those weren't driven by climate change. They were driven by natural cycles in the change of the climate. Now, I'm not going to claim to be a meteorologist or a physicist, but the fact is, they want this to drive a political agenda. And the political agenda involves the spending of literally trillions of dollars of your money. I'm not just talking about the government. I'm talking about mandates that come down where they want the utility companies to throw away power plants. And we're doing that literally right now. We're throwing away plants that have decades of useful life left in them. Coal-fired plants, nuclear-fired power plants. And they basically want Americans to live at a lower lifestyle. They want to norm the idea that you're not going to have reliable energy in this country. And we're already starting to see hints of that going on right now. They're going to strain the grid. The grid is not built to handle what they're throwing at it right now. And I've pointed out to you that in the last couple of weeks, California had a period of time where they were short of energy, but they had wind and solar that was available, except it really wasn't available because they didn't have the grid to carry the energy to where it was needed. They went out and built windmills and solar farms so fast that they didn't have the wires and the grid to connect it. So it's one thing to say, gee, this solar farm or this wind farm can produce all this energy. It's quite another thing to get all that energy where it needs to be. And I'll point out to you, too, after this storm in Florida, one of the things I expect to see, and it should anger people, of course, Florida is a great place to put solar panels on the roof of your house, assuming the hurricane doesn't rip them right off the roof. After this hurricane is over, many people were sold on the idea of putting solar panels on their roof, but it was through a scheme, a subsidy scheme, that said, you don't control that power. You don't even have access to the power. The way it works is you put the solar panels on your roof, and everything they generate goes into the grid, and you either run your electric meter backwards, or you might even get paid by the local utility company for the power you generate. So if you make 10 kilowatt hours and you use 5 kilowatt hours, the other 5 goes into the grid, and it offsets your bill. The problem with it was, after the last big hurricane in Florida, there were actually people who sat there saying, I have no electric power. I have these solar panels on my roof. They're not feeding the grid because the grid is down, but I can't use the power because they set the system up so the individual homeowner who, in quote marks, owns the solar panels on his or her roof doesn't actually get to use the power even when nobody else can use it. This is the kind of insanity we're up against. And we're talking about, well, Joe Biden just recently, with the badly named Inflation Reduction Act, saying we're going to put hundreds of billions of dollars into alternative sources of energy. And if you ask yourself the logical question, why would, if it's such a great idea to do it this way, why in the world would we need to subsidize it? And the answer is because it's not such a great idea. It's not ready just yet. By the way, you know that I'm a small business owner. I have a little radio company called Lars Radio LLC. But even if you're not a small business owner, if you've been to the grocery or hardware store recently, you know America has major supply chain issues. And in times like this, the businesses that succeed, they're the ones that are forward thinking. And one of the best ways to stay ahead of the curve is use technology your customers use every day. And that's where Podium comes in. Podium gives your business the tools to compete with the convenience of bigger businesses, even huge companies like Amazon. Podium lets you communicate with your customers via text message, something that most people do dozens of times every day. I know I do. Podium is just so convenient, and it works for basically any business out there, from plumbing to healthcare or IT. Podium helps customers communicate their needs, pay their bills, get their receipts, and a whole lot more. One jeweler sold a $5,000 ring through his website and then coordinated the curbside pickup via text messages all through Podium. See how Podium can grow your business. Watch a demo today at podium.com/Larson. That's podium.com/Larson. Podium, let's grow. Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. I'll get to your phone calls and emails a bit later, but about a year ago, I'm sure that you remember this if you're a conservative. Liberals, I'm not so sure about, but there were some incidents that went on. Loudoun County, Virginia seemed to be ground zero for this, where a father showed up at a school board meeting angry and understandably angry because his daughter had been sexually assaulted in a restroom by a transgender student, and he was objecting, and he was objecting loudly, but that's all it was. And then we saw the Attorney General of the United States, Merrick Garland, thank God he never got on the Supreme Court, put out a memo calling parents who dared to stand up to school boards on things like CRT and transgender policy and pronouns and all that. He called them domestic terrorists. So I thought I'd check in with Angela Morabito, who is former press secretary at the U.S. Department of Education under Secretary Betsy DeVos. And I have to say, Angela, welcome to the program. But thank God we had Betsy DeVos, even for the short time we had her. I thought she was a gift to the Department of Education. Welcome back to the show.
Thank you so much, Lars. It's great to be with you. And even though I'm biased because it was wonderful to work for her, I can't help but agree. I got to see up close the progress that Secretary DeVos made for students. And it's something I think we all can be thankful for.
Well, and see, the thing is, I'm one of those guys who's actually called for the dissolution of the U.S. Department of Education. But as long as we have to have it for right now, at least have somebody in there who knows something about the subject and who's dedicated her life to things like charter schools and giving parents some alternatives for education of their children instead of the one-size-fits-all government schools. But are things any better today than they were a year ago when Merrick Garland and the DOJ declared a lot of us who've stood up and objected to school boards called us domestic terrorists?
I think there has been some incremental progress, and all of it is owed to parents and the groups that support them in going after their school boards, not in some sort of personal attack like the Attorney General wanted you to believe, but in support of their children and in support of positive change. We're right about at the one-year mark from when the National School Board Association sent that infamous letter to President Biden that smeared concerned parents as domestic terrorists. And as you well know, and as I'm sure many of your listeners will remember, the Department of Justice used that letter to justify a memo threatening those concerned parents with the FBI. So as the government has doubled down on some really bad decisions, parents have only gotten louder. The calls to silence them backfired spectacularly.
Well, let me ask you this, just so we're clear. Didn't we ultimately find out that the letter generated by the NASB was actually something that the White House had effectively reached out and said, hey, we need a letter from you saying this. And then when we get the letter, then we'll react to it. And Merrick Garland will pretend he didn't know anything about it. He just read about it in the newspaper and decided to act on his own. I mean, all of this sounds like a giant setup.
Yeah, there are still a lot of questions surrounding the origins of this letter and a lot of evidence, just like you said, to suggest that the Biden administration had at least something, maybe a very big something, to do with it. Now, here's what we do know, is that the White House was in touch with the School Board Association on, you know, some sort of matter. We don't have a lot of details there prior to the letter. And there's also an email that was uncovered by a Freedom of Information Act request that referenced Secretary Cardona, the Secretary of Education, soliciting some kind of letter from the school board group. Now, the Ed Department has come out and denied that it was the letter, but those questions are still there, and I think Americans deserve a real answer from the federal government, an answer which, a year later, we just don't have.
Yeah, because I don't like it when people engineer something to make it look as though there's an honest appeal from a private sector organization, although I don't even know that I can call the National Association of School Boards a private sector, because they essentially represent school boards, which in almost all cases are basically the governing boards of government operations, public schools around the country. And weren't there a lot of states that said, we no longer want to have anything to do with this association as a result of this dust up?
There were, Lars, 25 of them specifically. So the National School Boards Association has now lost half of its state affiliates. But when we think about this, when we zoom out and think about this issue, even outside of this infamous letter and the DOJ's wild memo, we actually see how big this issue is and how much the progressive left has failed to learn from the backlash they got to this letter. This should have been such a clear sign that parents are not forgetting what happened during the COVID lockdown. They are not giving up on school reform. And yet, you have Democrats and people on the left making these same mistakes again and again. I think about Disney in particular, how they went up against Ron DeSantis' Parental Rights and Education Act, calling it the Don't Say Gay bill. We all remember that name, even though that name was false. They sure did make it stick. And think about the backlash that parents had to that. So every time an organization, whether it's in the government or not, has gone up against parents, it has lost spectacularly.
See, I find all this, I mean, my adult kids went to public school. My wife and I both went to public school. But this is frightening. The idea that the government wants to exert this kind of control over American families. And I always hear school districts and teachers say, oh, we want parents to be involved. Except they want your involvement, essentially pay your taxes and don't give us your input about how kids are educated. And you get people like Terry McAuliffe who shoots off his mouth and says he didn't get to be governor of Virginia, but he said parents have no business telling us how we educate your kids. I thought that was kind of a wake-up call for a lot of American parents. How dare you do that?
It is. And, Lars, I'm a proud public school alum, too, from here in Georgia. And I can tell you I don't recall my parents ever having to go before a school board to ask for permission to be the number one authority in the lives of their children. That wasn't a special favor you had to ask for from the government. Well, now with the teachers' unions digging in their heels in so many places, it is. And that's why you see these moms and dads showing up and just asking for really basic things like, hey, please teach my child to read, write, and do math. Hey, please do not put wildly inappropriate political or otherwise explicit materials in front of my kindergartner. So this is a conversation that is long overdue, but quite frankly, that we should never have to have. And it's still going on. To the earlier point about the defenders of the education system just not listening, the teachers unions in New York City last week announced that parent-teacher conferences were only going to be virtual. You had to go ask special permission if you wanted to walk into your child's classroom and speak with their teacher. And that is just an affront to the role of parents in the life of their child. And it sure makes you wonder what that teachers union is trying to hide in those schools.
Yeah, it surely does. Hey, I understand you're doing well at the Defense of Freedom Institute, and we really appreciate you taking the time, Angela. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much, Lars. I appreciate you.
Yes, ma'am. That's Angela Morabito, former press secretary at the U.S. Department of Education under Secretary Betsy DeVos. This is a free speech zone every single day. And of course, on Fridays, we mark First Amendment Fridays. You're welcome to join us then. We open up the phone lines and everything is fair game. But if you want to jump into the best conversation in talk journalism, it's 866-439-5277. Send your emails to talk@LarsLarson.com. Vote in our Twitter poll at Lars Larson Show. And of course, tell Alexa to play the Lars Larson Show.
Let me be clear. If you're in a state where hurricanes often strike, like Florida or the Gulf Coast or into Texas, a vital part of preparing for hurricane season is to get vaccinated now. Everything is more complicated if you're not vaccinated and a hurricane or a natural disaster hits.
Now, that is Joe Biden, the Commander-in-Chief, President of the United States, and this is the Lars Larson Show. Believe it or not, that was Joe Biden. I'm completely serious. Hurricane Ian made landfall in Florida several hours ago. It is ripping through the state as a Category 4 hurricane, wind speeds at about 155 miles an hour. And people are seeing and sending out videos of homes floating by their homes because so much rain has been dumped on that state and in the surrounding region. I'd encourage you to say a prayer and spare a thought for our fellow Americans in the great state of Florida. Welcome to the Lars Larson Show. Glad to have you with me, and we'll give you updates as they become available on that. But we have a lot to talk about, including Joe Biden, whose hurricane advice was get vaccinated. Sure, I'm sure that in the last couple of days, as that hurricane was bearing down on the state of Florida, one of the things on your list, probably not at the top of it, was, yeah, I need to go to a clinic that may even be closed, and I'll get a vaccination because that's the most important part of preparing for a hurricane to hit your state. Can you believe that guy is the president of the United States? Now, if you'd like to join the best conversation in talk journalism, it's right here every day at 866-HEY-LARS. And if you're a naysayer, that is, you disagree with my point of view, that's okay. It's not only okay, if you're a naysayer, you go right to the head of the line at 866-439-5277. You can send your emails to talk@LarsLarson.com. Get a lot of naysayers that way as well. And you can vote in our Twitter poll. I'll get to the poll question in just a moment. Let me tell you what's coming up this hour. Joe Biden has promised that if Russia invaded Ukraine, the Nord Stream pipeline would be shut down. And here we are 8 months later. The pipelines appear to be sabotaged. Do you think Joe Biden did it? We'll make the case for means, motive, and opportunity just a little bit later. How much will Joe Biden's student loan forgiveness actually cost the taxpayers, including those who've never even attended college, let alone got the opportunity to try to get a college degree? Yeah, and that's if the courts let it happen, because what Joe Biden is doing is absolutely illegal. And when I say it's illegal and you say, well, if he's doing it illegally, there must be a way to stop him. Yep. The court cases are in motion right now, and let's hope a judge shuts this thing down before $400 to $500 billion, almost half a trillion dollars, goes out the door. Now, listen, if you went to college and you got a bad degree or you dropped out early, okay, you have my sympathy, but you shouldn't have my money to pay for the loans that you took out. You were over 18. You could read, write, and count. You signed your name on the dotted line. It's your debt to pay. You allegedly got the benefit. And if you argue, well, I didn't get the kind of benefit I thought I was going to get, then it sounds like you made bad choices. And if after you turn age 18, if you make bad choices, act like an adult and pay for those bad choices. And who knows what's best for your kids, the kids or the governor? Well, yesterday, students staged walkouts all over Virginia over the governor's transgender school policies that are designed to protect the children. We're going to talk about that with our friend in Virginia. And take just a moment to cast a vote in my Twitter poll. We write up a brand new question each and every day out of the news of the day, and then we put it on at Lars Larson Show on Twitter and at LarsLarson.com on our website. Did Joe Biden sabotage the Russian Nord Stream 2 gas pipeline? You remember the audio that we played yesterday? Here are the words that Joe Biden said. If Russia invades, that means tanks or troops crossing the border of Ukraine, again, there will be no longer a Nord Stream 2. He said that on February the 7th before the Russian invasion of Ukraine. We will bring an end to it. And then a journalist said, well, how are you going to do that? Because Germany and Russia control the project. And the president's response was, I promise you, we will be able to do it. We will bring an end to it. Well, now it appears to have been sabotaged. And it sounds like the guilty party might actually be the president of the United States. Today's Twitter poll can be found at Lars Larson Show and at LarsLarson.com. Brought to you by AMAC, the Association of Mature American Citizens. AMAC has the conservative values I believe in. I joined the group years and years ago. You can too. It's very easy. Just go to amac.us. or call 888-262-2006. AMAC's better. Better for you and better for America. Now imagine this. I know almost every day we play a soundbite or we quote something from Joe Biden that makes him sound like six kinds of nitwit. His own statements do that to him. But if you haven't questioned his mental state before, I want you to consider this. You might remember a couple of months ago when we talked about the tragic death in August of Representative Jackie Walorski. In fact, we talked to our friend Casey Hendrickson in Michiana about the fact that she died in a car accident in August. Now, Joe Biden released a statement about it, or somebody at the White House did, but it seems that Joe Biden has forgotten what happened because he staged a press conference, and at that press conference, Joe Biden said this.
I want to thank all of you here for including bipartisan elected officials like Representative Governor, Senator Braun, Senator Booker, Representative Jackie, are you here? Where's Jackie? I didn't think she was going to be here.
I didn't think she was going to be here. No, because she died almost 2 months ago, President Biden. Does it seem like maybe there are good reasons to question whether or not this guy has it all together upstairs or not, when he can't even remember the death of somebody who died less than 60 days ago? In any case, just something for you to think about. If you want to join in, it's 866-439-5277. I want to give you another number that really knocked my socks off. Joe Biden's border policies, which we talked about during our live broadcast from Capitol Hill last week, what are they doing with regard to narcotics? Now, I have people who say, well, the narcotics are coming from China. Yes, but they're coming in through Mexico and Texas. In just 3 days, in four traffic stops, Border Patrol agents have now confiscated $12 million worth of illegal drugs. The total amount of fentanyl that has been smuggled across the border since Joe Biden took the oath of office in January of last year is enough to kill 5 billion people. Two-thirds of the population of planet Earth could be killed by the amount of fentanyl that was smuggled across the border since Joe Biden became president and invited every illegal alien in the world to start crossing our border, saying there would be no consequences. Since last March, Texas Department of Public Safety officers have confiscated enough fentanyl to kill everybody in the United States. That is the scope and size of this problem. We've got to start taking it seriously. And then you've got to ask yourself this. Should any expectant mother inject that experimental chemical into her body? I'm talking about the COVID-19 vaccine, the mRNA. JAMA, the Journal of the American Medical Association, is now saying that they are finding mRNA in the breast milk of lactating women. 5 out of 11 women tested had detectable COVID-19 vaccine, not the disease, the vaccine in their breast milk. And you wonder, what kind of side effects is that going to have? Coming up, we'll talk about the student loan forgiveness program. Could cost $1 trillion. We'll get into the numbers in a moment. Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. It's a pleasure to be with you, and I'm glad to take your phone calls and emails. We'll get to those in just a moment. But we've been talking quite a bit about Joe Biden's crazy student loan forgiveness plan. The low point on that price tag is around $200 billion. The upper end of it may be as much as $1 trillion. Absolutely nobody seems to know exactly how much it may cost. It does seem that most people don't disagree. It's probably illegal, because the president of the United States does not have on his own the authority to spend dime one without the Congress approving it. And Joe Biden used the HEROES Act and argued that somehow we're in a national emergency and that the law passed a couple of years after the 9/11 terrorist attacks while we were at war in the Middle East has something to do with a pandemic that even Joe Biden has declared over. So I thought I'd get Preston Cooper on. He's a scholar with the Foundation for Research on Equal Opportunity. Mr. Cooper, welcome to the program.
Hey, thanks for having me on.
Or should I be calling you Dr. Cooper? I'm sorry, I don't want to cheat you out of your title.
No, Mr. Cooper is fine, or even Preston, I prefer it.
All right, Preston, tell me this. How much is this thing going to cost, and why are we so unsure about exactly what the price tag is?
Well, so the Congressional Budget Office came out with a score earlier this week that says the loan forgiveness is going to cost about $400 billion, so that's about $1,200 for every man, woman, and child in the United States. But that's not even the half of it, likely, because the CBO's score did not take into account some of the other components of this loan forgiveness package that President Biden pushed through by executive fiat, because President Biden says, loan payments going forward for people who still have debt are going to be cut by half or more. He says that the repayment pause is going to be extended towards the end of the year. And we still don't know how this is going to affect borrowing and repayment decisions going forward. If you think you might get your loans forgiven, why not take out a bigger loan in the future? If we add all those costs up, it's quite likely that the total cost will be north of $1 trillion.
North of $1 trillion. And by the way, as I understand it, one of the parts that, and I've only seen a couple of places report on it, we mentioned it, but they said the biggest part of the forgiveness is not the man or woman who had $10,000 or $20,000 in debt and it gets forgiven, assuming that survives the court challenge. But as I understand it, if you're somebody who's in this process where they pause the payments and pause the accrual of interest, if you're, say, a doctor or a lawyer, and you've got $300,000 in student loan debt, and that's paused for a period of time, and the interest does not accumulate during that time, the benefit to doctors and lawyers, the upper end of the income scale, could be $40,000 or $50,000 or $60,000. They're getting much more forgiveness than the young man or woman who may have dropped out of community college just trying to get some AA degree.
That's correct. You know, the Committee for Responsible Federal Budget kind of crunched the numbers on this, and they estimated that solely because of the payment pause and the suspension of interest and the fact that we've had inflation that is going to erode your real balance, a doctor is going to get about $50,000 of student debt forgiveness. A lawyer is going to get about $30,000 of student debt forgiveness. So those folks, you know, because of the Biden administration's policies, they're getting even more forgiveness than the $20,000, you know, on top of the $20,000. So, you know, it's really the $10,000 or $20,000 that you read about in the news. That's really just the tip of the iceberg.
Yeah, and I could see a political component to that, because I know that politicians know where a lot of their campaign dollars come from. They come from well-heeled people and their families who write checks to politicians. So if they're if they're handing out to a doctor, a lawyer, man or woman, you know, that kind of forgiveness, and they may have wealthy or affluent moms and dads, they're going to be very grateful for that. And I would imagine they might even write some checks to fund campaigns, because they'll say, hey, this is the president, you know, who gave our son or daughter a $50,000 benefit. That's worth a couple of thousand in a campaign donation, isn't it?
I think that's right. You know, I think this is a pretty transparent, you know, vote buying initiative. So only about 13% of the adult American population even has student debt. But we need to look at where those people are concentrated. You know, they tend to be concentrated in urban areas, you know, blue states, you know, places that President Biden's party is going to need to win in the midterm elections if they want to keep Congress. But, you know, the people who are getting the benefit from that are very different from the people who are going to pay the cost. You know, CRFB estimates that inflation might go up by about 0.3 percentage points. It doesn't sound like much, but that's hundreds of dollars per year for the typical American family. And that's going to be a boost in inflation that's going to be with us for years, if not decades. So, you know, we really need to look at who is benefiting from this and who is paying the price.
Well, because ordinarily, so people can understand, you can correct me if I'm wrong on this. If you tell somebody who's got substantial student debts, those are frozen for right now. The interest is frozen. There's no point in you even paying for them. Then that man or woman may say, well, that gives me, I was going to have to pay $500 a month on my student debt. Now I don't have to pay that, and I'm not accruing interest. So that gives me another $500 a month that I can spend on something else. You know, whether it's good times or putting it in savings or paying down other bills, but the money gets out into the economy. Because you say, I've got an extra $500. I think I'll take that weekend trip. That'll pay for that. And that goes right into the economy and pushes inflation, doesn't it?
That's exactly right. You know, with the economy at capacity right now, we've got 8 or 9% inflation. We've got lots of job openings. You know, production is not able to keep up with demand. If you suddenly put $400 billion into the economy, that's not going to just encourage more production. That's just going to go right into inflation, you know. And it's everybody who's not getting the loan forgiveness who is going to be paying those higher prices, which is the price of this, you know, forgiveness initiative.
I'm talking to Preston Cooper, who's with the Foundation for Research on Equal Opportunity. So I mentioned to you, and it sounds like we agree, that what Joe Biden has done without action by Congress is illegal. Is the pause, and especially extending the pause all the way to the end of the year, or as I prefer to say it, well after the election, is that part of it legal?
Well, you know, that part is still up for debate. So President Biden has extended the pause about 5 or 6 times so far. And so far, nobody has sued over that component of it. It's questionable whether his emergency powers under the COVID-19 emergency declaration really extend that far. But I think that it's quite clear that the actual $10,000 or $20,000 of loan forgiveness that he's doing, there's no authority for that in the statute. You know, that is quite clearly illegal. And we did see a lawsuit filed earlier this week seeking to reverse the loan cancellation.
Yeah, and I'm hoping that some judge sees fit to say, we're going to put a temporary restraining order on that. We're not going to let that happen. But the reason I ask about the other is that who would be in a position to sue? You know, ordinarily to sue in court, you have to say, I was harmed in some way. I think all American taxpayers are harmed when somebody gets a chance to get out from under a debt that they owe that's paid back through the government. So the pause, if the pause is justified by national emergency, but Joe Biden a few weeks ago actually declared on 60 Minutes, the CBS TV show, that the pandemic was over, doesn't that dramatically undercut his excuse for granting even a pause?
I think it absolutely does. You know, President Biden, under this HEROES Act, this law that he has used that he claims gives him the authority to forgive student debt, that law basically says if you're going to provide relief, that has to be narrowly targeted, tailored to the actual financial harms that people have suffered as a result of the financial emergency. But, you know, most people who have the biggest student debt balances, they're probably, you know, white collar professionals. They are able to work from home. They may not have suffered that much financial harm from the pandemic. So if you're just granting $10,000 or $20,000 of debt to anybody, a debt forgiveness to anybody with student loans, there's no way you can say that that is, you know, a targeted relief operation. You know, it's ridiculous. And I don't think on the merits it's legal. But the key question is, you know, finding somebody who is actually suffering a concrete harm from this loan forgiveness issue. The lawsuit that was filed, they think they found one, but usually the courts will say you can't just sue on behalf of taxpayers. You know, you have to find somebody who suffered actual concrete harm.
You know, maybe when we get a real Congress back, we could actually get a law that says when all the taxpayers are harmed, even to a small degree, that may be a cause for a class action suit. That's Preston Cooper, Dr. Cooper, scholar with the Foundation for Research on Equal Opportunity. Preston, it's a pleasure to have you on the program. Coming up in a moment, to fix a crime, to determine who did it, police often try to establish means, motive, and opportunity. So if we bounced all three of those elements against the reasonable suspects for the Nord Stream pipeline attack, what appears to be deliberate sabotage, one suspect stands out. I'll tell you who he is coming up in a moment, and I'll get to your phone calls and emails. 866-439-5277. You're listening to the Lars Larson Show.
If Russia invades, that means tanks or troops crossing the border of Ukraine again, then there will be no longer a Nord Stream 2. We will bring an end to it.
How will you do that exactly, since the project and control of the project is within Germany's control?
We will. I promise you, we'll be able to do it.
Now, that was Joe Biden, as you can tell from the soundbite. It was before Ukraine was invaded by Russia. It was February 7th of this year. So Joe Biden is saying, if they invade Ukraine, there will be no Nord Stream 2. And the reporter naturally is a little confused and says, well, how are you going to do that? The project isn't under your control. I'm going to tell you, means, motive, and opportunity might just spell it out. And the answer is not a good one. If America decided to take part in sabotaging the Nord Stream pipelines, let me get to that in a moment. If you want to join the best conversation in talk journalism, it's right here at 866-HEY-LARS. That's 866-439-5277. You can send emails to talk@LarsLarson.com. Vote in our Twitter poll. Did Joe Biden sabotage the Russian Nord Stream 2 gas pipeline? And again, that's what I'm going to talk about. I think that a great analysis of this was done by the Gateway Pundit. And my producer, Mackenzie Prunty, and I, she laid this out very nicely. But consider this. If you think the way a cop would think, if a crime is done, how do you determine who did it? Who had the means, who had the motive, and who had the opportunity? Well, means actually eliminates most suspects. As they point out, only a government with advanced naval warfare capability could have gone out to the ocean and then attacked a pipeline so precisely. And in fact, we noticed during some of the reporting on this yesterday that there were seismographs that showed that this rated about a 2 on the Richter scale. Not big when you're talking about earthquakes, but when you're talking about an explosion underwater, a 2 or a 2.3 is pretty serious. Well, as Gateway points out, that limits the suspects to Germany, Great Britain, France, the United States, Russia, and China. But the means also involve proximity. Chinese or French naval activities in the area would have raised some big red flags. Geography would seem to preclude the United States, except that the U.S. Navy operates in every single ocean in the world with advanced warfighting capabilities. So the list of suspects with the means to destroy Nord Stream comes down to the U.K., the U.S., Russia, and Germany. Then you go to motive. Germany has no motive to destroy its energy lifeline. In fact, if anything, Germany has made itself highly dependent on Russian natural gas. You remember I pointed out to you that when Donald Trump was president, he was laughed at and ridiculed by some of the energy ministers when he said, if you make yourself too dependent on Russia, this is not going to end well. Entire German industries are now being nationalized because of the lack of energy due to sanctions against Russia and Russia reducing the flow through those pipelines. In fact, Germans held massive protests over the last weekend demanding that Germany pull out of the anti-Russian alliance in exchange for a return of energy. So you've got people in Germany saying, we need our heat turned on. We're coming into winter, or we're going to be coming into winter in a couple of months. We need that heat. Drop out of the alliance. Stop sanctioning Russia so we can have what we need to keep the country turned on. Great Britain has also suffered under the sanctions imposed after Russia invaded Ukraine in February. The British economy is in trouble right now. The central bank has had to pivot back to what they call quantitative easing. That's playing with the money supply to try to get a handle on things. And the new government in the UK has its hands full with forming a government. It's unlikely the Brits would try that. Russia seems to have a motive, inflict long-term pain on Europe for sending lethal arms to Ukraine. But as Gateway points out, Russia didn't need to blow up its own pipeline. Russia controls the valves. And that means Russia can turn off the spigot anytime they want. Russia paid for a part of that pipeline and expects to resume profitable energy exports. And as I've pointed out to you dozens of times on this show, Russia makes much of its foreign currency income by selling energy. Now, they might want to turn the valves off or claim that they're doing maintenance, or they could come up with 100 excuses to reduce the flow through the pipeline. But blowing up their own pipeline, that costs Russia money. Now, that leaves the United States as a suspect. So what are the motives? The U.S. became the number one exporter of liquefied natural gas to Europe once Russia cut off the flow. German dependence on U.S. LNG is a carrot to keep German in the sanctions alliance. With winter approaching and German unrest on the rise, as Gateway puts it, the State Department would have been concerned that the Germans would go wobbly, reduce the sanctions, cut off arms to Ukraine, and then beg Vladimir Putin for energy. The loss of the Nord Stream pipelines eliminates that path to renewed gas imports. Instead, they have to buy it from us. The Biden family has long been tangled up in natural gas and Ukraine. Hunter Biden was on the board of Ukraine's largest natural gas company, a position that provided Ukrainian oligarchs with access to Joe Biden. Hunter, who has no experience whatsoever in energy, made millions of dollars from that deal. We've talked about that dozens of times on this program. Ukraine got a bought and paid for president of the United States. And in third, the Democrat Biden needs to staunch the popularity that is bleeding, that threatens to kill Democrat control of Congress come November. So only the United States has a compelling reason, a motive to destroy energy, the energy lifeline between Europe, Western Europe, and Russia. Only the United States has both the means and the motive. But what about the opportunity? They quote Sea Power magazine, the official magazine of the Navy League, which reported in June of this year on a U.S. exercise in the Baltic Sea directly over the spot where the two massive undersea explosions took out the Nord Stream pipeline. Advancements in communications technology demonstrated this year have shown a significant improvement in operating ranges over currently used systems. In other words, the Navy had the opportunity to plant explosives on the pipes in June for remote detonation at a time of the president's choosing. And the world's largest amphibious ship, the USS Kearsarge, was recently in the area. Means, motive, and opportunity. Glad to have you with me. If you want to join the best conversation in talk journalism, it's right here at 866-HEY-LARS. That's 866-439-5277. Send your emails to talk@LarsLarson.com. A couple of other things I want to mention to you. Number one, is there a pattern in the recent wave of violent crime. In New York City, a homeless man captured on surveillance footage beating a woman inside a Queens subway station last week was arrested as a teen decades ago for killing his own grandmother. The suspect has a lengthy criminal history, including a bust for beating his grandmother to death in 1995 when he was 14 years old, 26 years ago. He was living with his grandmother at the time of her death, confessed to the killing. This guy was arrested in 2010 for stabbing a 50-year-old woman in the cheek and the shoulder. Again, he's on parole right now till 2024 for the assault in 2010. So in other words, law enforcement and prosecutors know the criminal history of these people. Are they doing anything about it? Sounds like they're not. Let me tell you about an interesting product that I've been using. It's a deep penetrating CBD cream, and this stuff's amazing. It melts into your muscles and joints, your knees, your elbows, your shoulders, your back, even your stiff hands. You won't believe how fast it goes to work, and it might be the best moisturizer I've ever tried. I keep a bottle on my desk. I use it every day. It's called the Gen Pop Cream. It was created by my friends at Generic CBD, and it's on sale right now, and you can try it 100% risk-free. For $5 shipping and handling, they'll ship you 2 free samples. Keep one for yourself and give one to a friend. And don't worry, it's not a subscription. There's no risk. Might be the best muscle and joint cream out there on the market today. Give it a shot. Maybe it works for you. Get a free sample at Generic CBD, your number one source for generic CBD, GENERIC, genericcbd.com. These statements have not been evaluated by the FDA. The product is not intended to diagnose any disease. Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. Keeping an eye on the progress of Hurricane Ian as it tracks across Florida, 155-mile-an-hour winds, Category 4 storm. And as we get updates or anything significant, we'll let you know. A million people without power. But please spare a thought and say a prayer for our fellow Americans who are in the middle of that big storm right now. There is a political storm of sorts that's going on in the Commonwealth of Virginia, far north of Hurricane Ian. And Joe Thomas joins me now. He holds down the fort in the morning. Joe Thomas in the morning, 5 to 9 in the morning on our affiliate station, WCHV 107.5. Joe, welcome back.
Hey, Lars, how are you doing, sir? It was great to run into you guys up at Feet to the Fire in D.C. last week.
Yeah, and we thought we got the politics out of our system, and then I see this report that literally thousands of Virginia students walked out of their classrooms yesterday morning and in the afternoon to protest some policies that would roll back what the mainstream media likes to call protections for transgender youth. What's going on there?
Well, and more of them today, including Charlottesville High School and Buford Middle School here in Charlottesville. They apparently couldn't pull it off with police protection, ironically, on the day when it was coordinated by, and I want to get the name of this group right. Hang on one second, because there is a group [S2] Sure. [S1] That put all this and is the Pride Liberation Project, Lars, and it's a very concerning group, because when I started to listen to some of the rhetoric and Karine Jean-Pierre, ostensibly from the podium at the White House press room, compared Glenn Youngkin to George Wallace and gay kids or transgender kids to black students who weren't being allowed to attend the same school. And then you look at this Pride Liberation group, and they use the Liberation Army, the Black Liberation Army fist over a rainbow flag. And it's offensive. If I was a black man or woman or especially one who came up through the Jim Crow era, the real Jim Crow era, I'd be completely off my rocker offended by the co-option of this agenda by this group of small activist students. But they get a big crowd because it's high school, and oh, everyone's going to do a walkout. Let's do a walkout. And most of them are acting like Glenn Youngkin is going to outlaw gayness and make them go to segregated schools, when that's not even a close to what our policy is that the Department of Education has put forward, saying that parents should be involved. And when they talk about being targeted for punitive, and I listen to this, and I'm saying, all it says is your parents have to know what's going on in your life. And the ultimate irony is that these are the same students that the administration and most the leftists say are not sufficiently capable of decision-making to own a firearm, but they're sufficiently decision-making savvy to decide what parts of their body to cut off or not. It's insane.
Okay, now if we boil it all down, two major policies. I mean, I know it's probably much more complicated because government, even government schools can't do anything in an uncomplicated way. They say if you consider yourself transgender, you have to use the restroom that matches your actual gender. Is that?
Yes.
That's part one. And part two is if you want to be called by a different name or a different pronoun at school, we have to have your parents have to consent to it. And this is what they're objecting to, those two policies, saying if you're a biological boy, you got to use the boys' room. If you're a biological girl, use the girls' restroom and the girls' locker room. That's one piece of it. The second piece is you want to change your name or your pronoun, you got to get your parents to sign off on it. That's it. That's all?
That's it. And their concern is parental notification, because the claim is that parents won't allow kids to be who they are. And that, to me, is ridiculous. First and foremost, children who are having body dysphoria and are just having issues with who they are physically, that happens. But you also need to be able to talk to people, and just hiding behind the school marm and saying, well, she understands me. Of course she understands me, because the school superintendent works for a bunch of politicians who want people to vote for them. It's crazy. But this, I called it this morning, and I don't have the historical, but there was a couple of events that led up to Lexington and Concord. And you know, I compared this to the Lexington and Concord of parents' rights, because this is,
well,
the schools pushing all the chips into the middle, saying we are more important to the kids. The kids are ours, not yours.
And if you have psychological difficulties, and I think what you've just spoken to, if you say, I've got gender dysphoria, I was born a boy, but I think of myself as a girl, or vice versa, you have some psychological problems. And in fact, even the folks who are sympathetic to this whole transgender stuff are saying, well, they're very subject to possible suicide and things like that.
Yeah.
And then we know that Virginia, Loudoun County in particular, had the experience of a young woman who was raped in a restroom by a biological boy who put himself forward as a girl, went into the ladies' room and raped a young lady. And actually, I think he had two victims by the end of it. That set off the parent, who then went to the school board, you know, was yelling at the school board, which set off Merrick Garland, the attorney general, to sic the DOJ and the FBI on parents who get too loud at school board meetings. So that's the context all this is happening in.
Right. And that's why I say this is the same battleground that Terry McAuliffe inartfully opened the doors to when he said, well, I don't think parents should have any rights in what's going on in the schools. This is now a much more organized, funded by Act Blue. If you look at this Pride Liberation Front, or whatever their actual name is, but they are almost entirely funded by money from Act Blue, the network of liberal contributions that John Kerry's campaign started in 2004, and they get all their money from the left. They are pushing this schools own the kids, not the parents. It is the line in the sand that is going to have to be pushed back on by Glenn Youngkin. He has so far done an excellent job pointing out that none of the things that they're saying rhetorically are anything close to what's in the actual bill. He actually said on my news tonight, just read the bill and read the proposal before you start complaining about it.
No, and this is a big concern that Americans should be aware of. The kids, the schools are trying to get between your kids and you. They want to bust up the American family. And frankly, Joe, this is why I'm a fan, at least from a distance, of the new Italian prime minister. Because she says, look, the family is the basic unit of human society, has been for hundreds of thousands of years of human history, long before the Democrats were ever created. And the family is the unit. And this government, including some people, actors within the schools, are trying to break that family unit up. That's Joe Thomas. He holds down the fort in the mornings on our affiliate station, WCHV in Charlottesville, Virginia. Joe Thomas in the morning in Freedom and Prosperity Radio. It's a pleasure to be with you. Always glad to take your calls at 866-HEY-LARS. Send emails to talk@LarsLarson.com. Think about our friends in Florida who are in the middle of that big Cat 4 hurricane, and you're listening to The Lars Larson Show.